Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hello and welcome to a special IGN UK podcast. We're talking all about God of War Ragnarok. We've done this one a lot quicker than the Elden Ring one. If you haven't played God of War Ragnarok, turn around now. We're going to spoil this straight off the bat. So it's about everything we love about this game. Maybe a couple of the little things we don't. But I think it's mainly going to be what's good about this game.
Oh, yeah.
With me is Dale Driver, who just went, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Matt Purslow, give me an oh, yeah.
I'm almost all in, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know, Dale. Me and you absolutely love this game. I know also that's... I'm not saying Matt doesn't love this game. He does love this game.
Oh, yeah, but he's just fantastic.
He hasn't played it, though, has it? Like,
no,
we're
platy boys. I'm sure Matt has desires to one day, though.
Yeah,
in the future.
Yeah. It's one of those... It might be the Christmas thing I do, just getting all of those little bits.
Like, or I feel like I'm already getting into it, but it is like the ultimate platinum game, right?
It's a very good platinum.
Like, is there anything when you were doing that platinum... Obviously, some of the bosses are super tough.
They're tough.
But is there anything you didn't enjoy doing, getting that platinum?
No, I will say... collecting all the artifacts before any guides are out was a bit of a pain, but I did have people like good friend Andrew Goldfarb helping me because he's also a maniac.
I found them mostly quite easy. There was a couple, obviously, we spoke about, like there's a hidden area in Alfheim, which I genuinely want to hear like what people, if people have found
that's
that
the only one
struggled to find.
I needed a hint on, like, I don't know if you know, Matt, there's like a puzzle in a chest. You know, have you been to the library in Alfheim in the desert?
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's one in that, not in there, underneath. There's like some wood you can break.
It's not stone. It's stone. But it looks like it's part of the environment.
Like, unless you look, because I've been in and there's an elf in there that you fight, right? And you get the book. And
outside.
Underneath it.
Oh, really?
Outside, underneath. Like, but the weird thing is, like, there's nothing else like that in the game. There's no other rocks like that to break.
That's the thing. The rock formation doesn't look like, you know, in games they have signifiers for this is breakable, this is not. It doesn't look like that at all. And there's dead bodies around it, so it just looks like there was remnants of a battle there.
But this is what, you know,
I wrote
a piece for the site recently, which was about how everything feels handcrafted in this game. And that, the way you're describing to me, that is, it's not a piece of content just dropped into the game.
Yeah.
That's a handcrafted idea that they know that there's going to be people that haven't found it. And the joy that you get from breaking through that barrier.
I say the one annoying thing about that, though, it's like it's one of the few big open world areas. So me and Callie both spent hours roaming around that fucking thing.
That is one I had to thank Mr. Andrew Goff. If you're listening, Andrew, thank you very much. I love how we started this podcast by talking about one little tiny bit of rock in a desert. Let's do some quick overall thoughts, because we kind of did this on the podcast a few weeks ago, but like, I obviously gave this game out of 10 out of 10. I absolutely love pretty much everything about this game. I personally think it is better than 2018's as a whole package. It just, despite it being, like we said, a more sprawling story, I actually think it is in some ways even more personal than 2018 was. And if, like, you know, I'm not one of these people that cries a lot of games, but this one had me close to tears a few times because it hits on things that get me a lot more. Like, 2018 hit on loss a lot more, and that's not something, don't get me wrong, loss is an awful thing, but I'm lucky in my life, I think, to have not had anything close to that. So things that get me going are always more happy, like happy tears are much more
like
common in my life.
Family relationships and stuff
and
like that.
People like being proud of people, like the Olympics, if someone wins a gold medal and they cut to like their dad crying in the audience, that's what fucking gets me every time. And the end of this game is all about a proud father, and that is what was getting me choked up. I'm even thinking about it now, I'm getting a little bit...
I remember, I think Joe said it ages ago, R.I.P. Joe, but it always stuck in my head that I think it too, is the fact that when a father says that they are proud of their son, there's something about that. And obviously, you know, there's elements of, you know, your real life is maybe like deep down, that's what I've always wanted, right? But that immediately, I can't control my face when that happens. I just literally tears
start
flowing.
Hitting that, I know we jumped right to the end, but like him the hug of like Loki goes, Atreus stays, that got me. I was fucking a mess at that point. The music swelling up when he jumps off the rocks at the end, basically saying goodbye, like you're a man now.
Yeah.
Then following up with the mural of Kratos, like so the breaking down because he's now, because that is also saying, in my life, I want to be loved. I want people to, I'm desperate for people to like me. So that got me.
The bit that got me was that when he opens it and realizes that kind of like, essentially he's Tyr, right? Like he is the god of war for this place. And just seeing him and realizing that people adore you. And that's a thing that like, I always put myself down. So seeing someone that I guess has minimalized his contribution to this world and seeing that
it's his equivalent of nice YouTube comments when you expect
but Kratos is always somebody who I feel like, even maybe in the older games, who doesn't he treats himself like I am the beast, I am this uncontrollable animal that has no emotion and stuff, when it's not true. It's clearly under the surface. Like my favorite line in the game is when Atreus returns and they come together and Kratos just says to him, what do I call you now? And it's just like, of all the people to be like so understanding of, you know, what clearly is like a similar, like it can be compared to like the trans issue these days or a queer issue, you know, it's this idea of accepting your child for who they are and what they want to be.
It's incredible.
And the idea that Kratos is a character that would be happily accept that is not something you'd necessarily think of.
Animation technology and just Christopher Judge in that whole last 10 minutes doesn't say a lot, but his face is just,
it says everything.
Unbelievable acting in that moment. And also the technology to capture that is just, it's unmatched, I think. It's just, it's phenomenal stuff. I know we jumped right to the end. We'll go back to the end at some point.
Yeah.
We're all going to go through plot points one by one, like some key bits to see what people think about them, some favourite bits, some stuff like that. I didn't really ask other people what their general thoughts are. I know you also love it.
I'd say 10 on 10 would recommend my game of the year. I don't even have to stop and think about that because I didn't and won't play Elden Ring. So, yeah.
That's fair.
Done.
I'm still torn in my head. Do I respect Elden Ring as a game more? Probably. Did God of War hit me harder in the heart? Whereas I tend to go with my heart over my head because I'm like that.
The emotional boy.
Maybe God of War. If one of these games came out last year, it would have been so much easier because there wasn't a clear winner last year.
I will say in comparison to 2018's one, I think there's only two things that 2018 has over of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one, being the first of its kind.
Yeah.
And two, being a very tight, concise story. Yeah. Like it is about Kratos learning to be a father, but also... like the enemy is bolder, it's always bolder all the way through, whereas this one is like sprawling, there's lots of different things, dynamics going on. I don't think that's a negative. I just see you know, you lean towards a concise story sometimes. Apart from that, everything in this sequel is better.
I didn't vote for God of War in 2018 because at that point it was my second favourite game of year. It's only because Red Dead Redemption 2, my favourite game of all time, I think at this point, came out that year, so I voted for it then. So I don't know. I know, Matt, you're definitely on the Elden Ring bandwagon, but that doesn't mean you don't like this game.
No, so I do it. And what I actually, to get overall thoughts with, I'd rather do this now because I can get out my...
You think it's a shiter?
So I do adore it. What I will say is 2018 is the winner out of these for me. I think 2018 kind of fits its form so perfectly. And I think that this one is maybe so ambitious that it occasionally stumbles. But my God, I'd rather play a game that is so ambitious that it occasionally stumbles than this. I think that this almost feels like it could have been two games, and I think would have allowed some of its storylines to breathe a bit better over two games. But in terms of mechanics and environments, none of that I've got a single complaint about. No. Yeah. That improves upon the first game.
Yeah.
It's just I think there are some concepts that I would have liked explored in a little bit more depth with a little bit of a slightly different pace. But that's really all, when that's the only complaint I can have about a game. Fucking hell, this is good.
I do think, because they've spoken, like they spent a long time thinking, is this two games, is this three games, this North Star,
and I understand the difficulty.
I do think that's cool, because I do think it is, like, maybe not, I do love it, so I don't think it is too much for one game, but it is bordering on, I know what you mean, a lot for one game. But is there enough for two games in there? I don't know.
My only thought of that was, imagine the reveal of Tyr being Odin being the end of the second game. Like, and it being the Empire Strikes Back formula, right?
I suppose they'd have to... I do think then they'd be struggling for like, oh, we need 8 hours of filler here. So it's only like 4 hours of the game.
But there's different stories. Original stuff, yeah. Wouldn't you? Yeah.
Maybe they didn't want to risk that. They were like, mm-hmm. I think also they didn't want, I think Corey Bollas spoke this, they wanted this saga to end like in realistic years. So if they did a third game, it would be another 4 years. Atreus in real time would be like 20. Sure. And it would feel, they wanted it to feel like.
You could also argue with
that time frame.
In terms of the father-son relationship, it could be them in the mm-hmm. second game coming apart.
Yeah.
And really at the point where they're furthest away from each mm-hmm. other. And then the third game being the reconciliation and Chris accepting him for who he is.
I personally like those two just because I would like to see another setting. I feel like they've struggled to do more Norse mm-hmm. stuff, I think.
Yeah.
And make it feel varied.
Although part of me, like, let's take God of War Ascension out of the mix. Part of me does like the idea of like a trilogy in Greece, a trilogy mm-hmm. in Norway, Norse, Scandinavia. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, and then a trilogy in, we'll get to that later. Yeah, but, you know.
To what we think could be next, mm-hmm. I do think.
And in a way, you can perceive it to be a trilogy that happened to be over two games.
Spoiler,
you know?
Yeah, what I think mm-hmm. is next. I do think we'll get more Norse stuff. It just might not involve Mr. Kratos. But there we go. Let's go through the game, like, plot points. Talk. Some we won't spend long here, but some we might spend. See, it opens with this great chase sequence with Freya, like basically just showing off, look how good the camera is again. It looks amazing. And then we have a little bit of a wander, and then you find out that Atreus is now a bear. Did you clock that he was the bear?
No,
because I didn't until there were, I should have thought, because I know Loki is a shapeshifter, but I was like, oh, I'm fighting this bear, and they obviously just call it Bjorn to totally mm-hmm. throw you off. But then, like, the fact that, like, within the first half an hour of the game, you almost kill your son.
I think fighting a bear at that point of the game feels logical anyway. Yeah, yeah. It feels like the sort of first hurdle, but just, you know, like, not a massive dragon.
I think they very cleverly throw you off the scent by making it very just seem like a tutorial fight. They're mm-hmm. like, you got to, like, they make you think about the gameplay so much, you're not thinking about what this could actually be. And
I thought it was a great device and a way to sort of mix in Norse mythology of the fact that Loki's a shapeshifter, but also finding Atreus is just like learning to live within his body and can't control his body. It's like going through puberty in a way. It was like fantastically done, and like you said, like, I don't think any of the twists in this game I really saw coming.
I didn't. No, I've seen some people be like, I knew they were starting off with Tyr the whole time. I was like, no.
Well, have you seen? So we had the
there
director.
There are clues. There are clues. Yeah, I was going to get to that later.
So I don't know if you saw it, Matt, but we had the director on Beyond, and they said about the subtitles mm-hmm. where it's got an accent over the Y when it's actually Tyr, but not when it's Odin.
Amazing. That's very clever. Yeah. And also, well, we'll get to that. We'll get to this in a bit. There's another cool thing with Odin. Lot of fun Easter eggs in this game. But after that, obviously, you go back to your house, and then Thor and Odin turn up, and.
Good grief, what a scene.
Yeah,
what a
that's scene. An incredible
you,
scene.
You don't expect them, after you've already seen that kind of flash-forward dream Atreus had, for it to actually just be a sit-down conversation.
Yeah. I think it's the way that they convey kind of like just Thor sitting at that table. Yeah. And it does that, you know, kind of like lots of things that have like different scale do this. But this massive kind of, you know, what does Odin call them? Like a side of beef or something just sitting at the table. And then when Odin comes in and you get the kind of like, okay, this guy is not the sort of figure that I was expecting of this game.
He's a quite not overly smart kind of just bodyguard for Odin, ultimately, isn't he? Who happens to be his son.
I thought that scene was so powerful, mainly because it introduced me to what is my favourite character in the game, which is Odin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because of all the depictions of Odin, it was just never the one I expected. Mm-hmm. I never expected this guy who's, yes, he's a smart talker and, like, you know, he's obviously got games going on, but he just feels like your friend. I'm a reasonable man. I'm here. I'll offer you this. I just want you to leave me alone.
It's almost like it made so much sense to get someone from the West Wing to play this character, because he's ultimately a Norse politician, right?
Yeah. They do such a great job, obviously, up until the point you realise he is a nasty piece of work, of thinking, is he the bad? Is he really doing stuff bad here? Like, you know.
I think I always assumed that he was going to be a shiter. But
like at points where we'll get to this again. But when you first go to Asgard and he's being very like, you're like, are these people that bad? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I found with Odin as well, like his obsession to see this truth, I found him so infectious that I wanted to know as well. Yeah. Like I wanted him to get that.
Yeah.
And I almost felt, even though he was the villain at the end of the game, I felt this tinge of disappointment that he didn't get that thing that he craved so much, that he sacrificed so much for. Mm-hmm. And like making a villain like borderline likable and relatable is like really like incredible writing. Mm-hmm.
That line as well, when just before you get into the Thor fight, he just goes to Thor, don't take too long. And then just Thor clicks her fingers and Mjolnir comes out.
I love the way he works with Mjolnir as well. This idea is almost like a pet. It's this call and response sort of thing. Like, it's just click a finger, a little whistle. Yeah.
It's such a like clever mirroring of the Baldur fight from the first game. Yeah. And it's just like up to notch. The way you just like, God, it's so good. Yes. I think they said it foreshadows the end of the game as well. It's like that what destroys the statue is like a spear or something. I think that's actually in the first game. Like, if you notice, like, a spear is what kills Thor's statue, and what ultimately kills Thor at the end of the game is Odin's staff spear. So, like, they thought about this a lot. Yeah. Like, it's so clever. But yeah, that fight and the fake out moment is just so good.
Oh, the defibrillator as Mjolnir is very, very good.
And that comes out of actual like Norse history of like Thor used used Mjolnir to bring goats back to life.
It's a bizarre thing. They do an excellent job of the fight of cutting into dialogue in between as well. Mm-hmm. Like God of War is done, but some of that dialogue and some of those interchanges when Thor is just like, look, he said it himself, I'm being a calm and reasonable person, but now you're getting the real me, now you're getting the sense, and they're just that gravel in his voice when he's talking about them both being destroyers and stuff.
And especially when he's like taking the piss out of you, he's like, I can't believe like my son's died to this.
He's like, but then he's like baiting him out, he's like, I want the real version. And then when you go into the rage mode for the first time, he's like, is that when you go into rage for the first time? But either way, it's like he responds saying like, oh, this is the guy, this is the one I want to fight.
God, what a scene. I mean, after that, you kind of get on your journey and you head off to a new realm for the first time. Svartalfheim is a beautiful place.
Yes.
Lots of dwarves. And this is where the next Easter egg comes into play. So, you know, when you first go into Nidavellir, the dwarven city, there's a dwarf on a bridge that spits on you because he hates you. That is Odin.
Oh, is it?
The director confirmed it is Odin. He's wearing a ring, you can see. And if you go later on, there's a prison in the game. There is that dwarf dead in that prison. So anyone who's in that prison, basically Odin can take the form of.
Oh, okay.
Which is where we'll talk about Tyr later on. Crazy. But so I don't know if there's more Easter eggs like that. But yeah, that dwarf is Odin, the one who just spits at you and walks away. I find that very funny. But
also, as other Easter eggs, did you know that one of the dwarves is Bear McCreary?
Yeah, he's the one with the one who sings the song. Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
So good. I love that place. It's just nice to see. I always like that in games when you're so used to like everything wanting to kill you, just go into a place that's kind of civilized. Yeah. It's kind of not that everyone likes you there.
But I think it's my favorite realm.
Really?
Because I just love the visual identity of it. I love the, like, there is a little city going on in there, and I also love the houses when you have to crouch through them.
Oh, it's so funny. They're just not built for him, are they?
that whole maybe the mine section is not as interesting, but that whole realm just has so much character and like a mix of biomes to a certain degree as well. And whereas the rest of them, there's a couple that are, you know, extremely vanilla because they're kind of like Muspelheim and Helheim. It's like you know what you're going to get with them. Whereas this one just had a lot going on.
Svartalfheim's up there for me. I think we're going to it. I think Vanaheim's my favourite, especially when it opens up.
There is that.
But I love that. I especially like the bit where you do go into mines and it turns into Pirates of the Caribbean for a minute. That is really good.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they kind of talked about, they look at like their level design and they kind of actually have a lot of love for like Disneyland. Like, they try and make a lot of their levels like rides.
And Svartalfheim especially feels like that because there's those, you know, there's the little carriages that you go on. There's also the boat rides that you go on. Mm-hmm. Especially in the mines area.
And lots of kind of like putting together elements so you can swing over things and stopping kind of.
There's a lot of good puzzle level design to get through that level. I know you're particularly keen on the puzzle levels.
Again, 2018, it's one of my favorite things about it is the fact that like every inch of that level design is covered in something to do that feels. Yeah. It's not even that the reward is necessarily good. It feels rewarding to do the thing that you're doing.
Rarely is there an area, and I know there's a lot of cracks in this game you have to slide through, but, you know, they're there for a reason. They never bug me, really.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them. But, like you said, there's never a wasted... Rarely do you just... Is there an area, a room you just walk through? There'll be a raven. There'll be a chest. There'll be a puzzle. There'll be something to do.
It's such an active journey for you as a player. Like you are thinking about what you're doing all the time, be it... Even if it is literally just, I've got to swing across this by pressing X, but you get to press X rather than just holding forward on the pad.
And the improvement this time is why I don't know if I can go back and play the original now, it's how fast the traversal can be now as well. Like I can see a box down below, but knowing I can just nip up and down with those Blades of Chaos. And it feels, even that, just climbing up a wall with them feels satisfying. Mm-hmm. Has this crunchy sort of powerful sound effect in the way that Doom has, you know, the way you nip around, that it makes exploring fun all the time.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's the first time you meet all Tyr. The time, you find out Tyr is alive. Mm-hmm. If you've seen the trailers, you knew Tyr. Well, it's not really Tyr, is it? But you think it's Tyr for about 30 hours. Yeah, I love that performance. I think it's Ben Prendergast who plays Tyr, and I just love how kind of like just sweet he is. I know it's
again,
ultimately
Odin. Unexpected because you go in expecting a Viking berserker, don't you? He's the god of war for the Norse pantheon, and just this very sweet pacifist.
Yeah, and I know ultimately it is Odin pretending to be a pacifist, but he is pretending to be. When you do ultimately meet Tyr, he's not far off of that.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about how like fun and cute it is as well that you assemble people and they all come and hang out at Brock and Sindri's house all the time. It's like collecting all your favourite Norse
cook some sausages together, have a nice time. I know you like the the snack line.
That's so good. I definitely feel there's a few lines in here where on paper you'd probably expect Kratos not to say it, and you would you wouldn't want him to say it, but when he does, it's so good. Like, it's down to Christopher Judge's performance.
I love that, like, the Sindri's house being a nice little hub this time. It's a much better hub than 2018.
I just wish there was, although I did see, and only after I finished game, I saw people from work talking about it, that the bookshelves apparently fill up with your collectibles.
All the poems,
So I didn't notice that, but part of my thing was I do wish there was a little bit more to do in that house, a bit more to explore.
You want a bit more like the Normandy, right, where there's kind of elements around. That
and
you can,
go and chat to people and there's things to interact with and stuff.
There's a lot of, you can overhear some cool stuff, but Brock and Sindri are amazing in this game. Like, they are so much
Sindri especially, I think, has such a good arc through this.
He's so good. And I also on a spoiler cast I listened to, they were talking about how, I think Corey Barlow said one of like the three things that needs to happen in this game was Brock needed to die, because he was kind of like the game's dog. It's like everyone loves Brock. He's like the, you know, everyone will hate it if Brock dies, so he has to die.
It's just, it was so unexpected for me, because obviously coming from the first game, you just see, you know, the background characters that are there to facilitate you upgrading your weapons, and I didn't really give them much of a thought. Like, I thought they were just a bit of a joke, but in this game it's like immediately they start establishing we're going to set a background for these guys, we want to know their story, they are part of the family, this is a family of characters.
It helps you get them as companions for levels as well, and you get to know them more. Like, the first time that happens is Sindri, when you shock players Atreus for the first time. And I think, like, as soon as they started following him, I was like, okay, is this a cutscene? Are we gonna how long are we gonna follow Atreus as he sneaks out here? And then they do the thing where the camera just stops and you're like, and you are Atreus. And the first time you play as Atreus, and the first thing you do is try and open one of those chests in your hand, and you just can't do it. It's
just
so good.
Grazes his fingers.
He's like,
again.
Oh, my dad does this so easy. Yeah. It's like, I love that moment. Like, obviously, we didn't spoil this. I think a lot of people left out of their reviews, which is very good, everyone, because this is a cool reveal. And it is amazing that they've just... It's fundamentally very similar combat. Like, the buttons are all the same. Mm-hmm. Like, you're doing the same... They all do roughly the same thing. But just how he feels so familiar, but yet... so different at the same time. He's so much more like acrobatic. He's little like dodge cartwheel. It's so good.
He's the dexterity build to Kratos's strength build, right? And I think when this section started, I maybe I'm just not giving enough credit to the idea of Santa Monica building an entire combat animation set for him, because I thought, oh, okay, Atreus will be the puzzle solver,
right?
And like, the start of his bit is like, you're just in a little bit of climbing, a little bit of puzzle, and then suddenly combat starts up and he's got all of his own moves, he's got his own weapons, they've built like the companion system so he can have his own companion that fulfills the Atreus role. Like absolutely astonishing attention here.
The bow feels good as well. He's a good range character.
Also, he's like Doctor Strange style shield as well. I love when that comes up and you can do like
some
all
of his
the
finisher moves. There's like one where he like almost like backflips off of them and then fires an arrow in. Oh, it's good.
I will say, as much as I agree with everything you guys are saying, I did constantly, and I think this is more speaks to how much I love playing as Kratos, but I did always kind of yearn to be Kratos again.
He's the more enjoyable character.
Yeah, he's definitely better, but I feel it was a great credit that it never felt like a slog. I was never like, oh, I can't wait to get back. Kratos does feel better.
There was one section where I didn't necessarily feel, but I know a lot of people do.
We'll get on to that, I feel... Also, the director said they properly mathematically worked it out that exactly 25% is Atreus and 75% is Kratos. Just because they know people will want to play as Kratos. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a good balance.
After you play as Atreus, You know, you, there's kind of a little bit. You go to Alfheim. Not, you know, there's some prophecy stuff happening there. It's a cool section. I don't think we've got a lot to say about Alfheim unless you guys do.
Perhaps one of the weak sections because it feels like a retread to a certain
That is degree. The only area, doesn't it, where it doesn't feel... It is obviously changed, but it does
not
feel
really
almost,
discovery
until
there,
you get out it? Into the like, the open world sand bits, which is completely new. The actual temple itself is maybe one of I still loved it, but it is one of the slight dips. Yeah.
So I actually don't have that, but I think I'm in a minority that I actually really like the Alfheim section from the original game, which is the bit that a lot of people don't. And I think it's just like I love elven architecture and always have every. Like fictional thing that has elves in it, be it D&D, Tolkien, any of that. I've always been drawn to elves, so I love exploring that kind of very kind of like ethereal sort of thing. So getting to go back there and seeing how it changed.
Those reflective crystals are very fun, especially they're very kind. And when you aim in it, automatically kind of go on.
It's my favorite like new puzzle element that's in the entire game. I love like knocking that axe off it and getting those trajectory puzzles.
Also, I don't feel like I give a solitary shit about the war between the dark elves and the light elves.
Something that like why are they fighting each other? Like it, I wish I'd had
it's an eternal war.
But it's also like. It didn't feel like it needed covering. And also, towards the end of the game, it's sort of pushing under the carpet so easily as well.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll go after that is when you have the full, proper Atreus section where you go to Ironwood, which is, I know, this is, I think, the section of the game that is most divisive.
Yeah.
I kind of get people's problems with it. It is, at the same time, one of my highlights of the game, but also one of its lowest points. Because I do think it has some of the way it opens... And the way you meet Angra Boda, I absolutely love her. I think her energy is ridiculously infectious. And her magic powers look absolutely incredible. The first time I saw that, I really wanted to put some of that in my video review, but I couldn't. I was just like, look how beautiful this looks.
It's like the first time since really about like Infamous Second Son where I've seen kind of like almost like particle effect work. And I've just been like, that is just genuinely spectacular.
Yeah. But then it also kind of has the dips, which is, I do like the slower, but I like that it slows down. And there's a lot of really good character development work there. Some important plot point stuff with the souls and the giant souls and putting them into what will become Jormungand. Can't get Jormungand out of my mouth. There we go. Weird thing to say. But there you go. But there is, in the middle of that level... There's the bit where you go down to the sinkhole to get paints. I don't think they needed that. That could have you spent a little bit too long there. Maybe you could have cut the yak ride in half a little bit. But then I think it picks up again. So I love the stuff with her grandmother and the giant stuff.
So I think that realm in general, like Jotunheim, has the best sense of discovery in that game. It all feels new. It all feels exciting. Like, did you really expect by the end of that... realm that you were going to be in as sort of the borrower sort of
so fun
like what's the Roald Dahl one big sort of situation like it has a great sense of discovery but I completely agree that I think he could have done with one less yak ride that whole painting section we didn't need to pick so many of those fruit I think they were facilitating building a relationship and to do that they had to add quite laborious gameplay stuff.
When the problem they had is like we want to fit a lot of story into this section but at the same time, we don't want to just have a 10-minute long cutscene. Yeah. 10 people will moan, I'm not doing anything for 10 minutes. Yeah. But it's like, there is that balance to be found. I think for 98% of this game, they get it spot on.
Yeah.
But that bit, I do absolutely love it because I love those the interaction between those two. And it's something you get in pockets later on, but they're not together for that much longer.
She's only really got that section where she's like a consistent character, right? The rest of it is just cameo appearances.
And my theory of what's next, we will be seeing more of her. But what do you think about Ironwood, Matt? You like it?
Yeah, like in general, ultimately it didn't bother me. Like I was just so like enraptured by just kind of like where the story was going and just having like a slower moment. So ultimately, like, it doesn't bother me. But, like, I agree, like, if I was coming on the editing floor at this stage, particularly having had a lot of time to reflect on it since I finished it, it'd be one of the bits that got trimmed a bit.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, pacing is it's always an odd criticism not to have, because it's a weird one, because it's going to vary for everyone and depends on how much side stuff you do along the way in this game. Like, it's going to vary for everyone. I ultimately, although you could cut bits of that, by the time the end of this game happened... I at the same time wanted to see what happened to the story, but I just also didn't want it to end. So I'm like, you know, you caught, you know, catch 22 in it. After that, is when you go back to home and then you have that cool Valkyrie fight and you find out it's Freya. I didn't clock that. I maybe should have, looking at it. I've watched it back and I'm like, oh, it does look a lot like it. But that's a cool reveal. That's a really good fight. And then you get her on side and as a companion, which is another cool reveal.
You did miss that one moment just before that fight.
Yeah. When this is my favorite bit in the entire game.
When you're playing Atreus and you go to walk towards the Yggdrasil portal thing, and then Kratos just walks through and confronts him face to face. Like, where have you been?
It's so been 2 days. Yeah.
It's like it's the you stayed out all night for the first time ever as a teenager sort of thing.
That's good.
And Kratos is like deadpan response to it, not deadpan, like his just pure aggression, but in this just very still presentation. And the way like nose first comes out of that portal, you know, so good.
But this is the bit, isn't it, where like because obviously Atreus is playing up, that's when he calls him boy. And it's the only time in the entire script he calls him boy, and I think for that word to have been so prolific that it became a meme from 2018 for them to use it so perfectly in that sequence. Excellent.
So good. Yeah. And then obviously you go off to Vanaheim so you can help Freya and free her, and in return she'll forgive you for killing her son.
I did think I liked everything they did in Vanaheim, the conversation where it was just felt natural conversation of like, I'm your mortal, you're my nemesis, to by the end of this, okay, we've got a lot in common, we can be friends again. But I did think she came around like maybe slightly quite quickly, like
vengeance wasn't the way, and I think they realised her anger was really directed at Odin more.
I'm talking about the initial okay, I'll come with you decision. It just felt like it just kind of like on a snap's like, all right, I'll let you live for now, but let's go.
It does lead to that fight with Nidhogg, which is a very fun boss battle. I love the way he just kind of appears out of a rift out of nowhere, and then I was worried it was going to be one of those fights where I know you have a similar problem with them, Matt, whereas kind of an off-screen boss battle and you're just hitting them, but then it just gets him
when he comes onto the field and you get to walk all the way around him and like really like it. That is kind of like, you know, the game owes a certain amount of debt to FromSoft's sort of stuff, but obviously does it on its own way, and this felt like the first time that they'd actually managed to hit the spectacle of a Souls boss fight, but it felt entirely God of War. Like really, really good work.
I will say about Vanaheim, not necessarily the northern part that we're going to talk about later, but the sort of the southern sort of eastern part. It's a lot of little rivers, isn't it?
I like being in the boat in this game.
There's elements of it I like, but I do feel like the land could have been a bit denser, because getting around it afterwards felt a bit laborious when I was constantly.
They
going
could have
on
done
boat
maybe
rides.
one more little fast travel port around there, but. Yeah. I do love that. After that, you get the side mission unlocked to do, which I think if you haven't done it, go do it. It's Freya's side mission in Vanaheim, which is one of the best, where you go to where she was married and you get a really cool sword for it as well. That's a great character bit, which is arguably, you know, it's one of those side stories that's so good you almost wish it was part of the main path for everyone.
For me, even just for, like, because I actually find it quite difficult to remember what was side and what was main how well orchestrated everything is. But like you say, like, a big part of Freya's story is the fact that, like, she's a woman that's gone through an abusive marriage. Yeah. And, like, that feels so core to what that character is and so core to her motivations for the rest of the game. The fact that it is a side story does feel bananas. It's in the same way in The Witcher, kind of the Bloody Baron's not the main quest, is it? It's a side quest, yet it is the iconic quest.
I did experience that one after I'd finished the game. I did do a couple during the game, and I did have that problem where it sort of blurred. And then I made a decision, right, I'm just purely focusing on the story, and I just mainlined the whole thing. And I'm so glad I did, because it felt like, because this side stuff is so well realized, it feels like another game. It feels like you're getting God of War 2.5 afterwards. It's like, I mean, no one's listened to us who haven't finished it already, but that would be I would recommend that to everyone, mainline it and then go back and have another game afterwards.
I would agree with that. It's apart from, I do feel like that Freya one fit perfectly at that point.
Right.
But I know there's always the balance, and I think they do a really good job here of a game that's about like a ticking clock end of the world scenario. They do a really good job of giving you reasons that you shouldn't just get on with that at times. Mm-hmm. Like, just whether it's just Kratos saying, or Mimir basically saying to Atreus, if you ever thought, he just wants to spend time with you. That's a moment.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
We're taking our time here, but maybe we should speed up a little bit. Asgard, you go to there. Ooh. When Atreus has a little hissy fit, doesn't he? He's like, mm-hmm. I want to go see Odin. He goes there. Asgard is probably not what a lot of people expected it to look like. It's much more like
subdued, isn't it? It's not
medieval.
It's like a village. Well, you know, this is not set in any sort of real world, but it's what you imagine like a Viking village would look like.
Yeah, I must say, kind of, I didn't obviously knew it wouldn't do the MCU bananas kind of like the boats flying in the sky and stuff like that. But I did expect something closer to what Assassin's Creed Valhalla had done, in which it's realistic but very heightened,
almost sci-fi. Still mystical to a certain degree. Yeah, it's like the realism on top of. Mystical islands keeping it afloat, sort of thing. There's that sort of balance between it. I agree, and it, for me, it was like quite surprising how it lived in. Like the fact that they've got load of Midgardians like living there as well. Like, didn't
that is one that thing? That is one character. I was like, I'm not sure what the Midgardian boy was adding. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they were trying to give like a reputation of like, there's normal people in this world you're trying to help. It's like, I never quite was on board.
Well,
with
it's almost like, I think he needs to be there. And this is why I think maybe two games would have actually helped them. But like, the fact that you've met one of them is part of the reason why, like, you decide to do the things that you do at the end, right? Like, you need to save the Midgardians.
You need a representation for a race.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did think the Heimdall reveal was great, especially because I had no idea who he was until they said he said my name's Heimdall.
Mm-hmm. He's such a brilliant prick. Yeah. He is just such
hateable, perfectly hateable
such
in the best way.
Such a slappable face and voice. And
actually, before he grabs you though, I found the climb of the wall really satisfying.
Oh,
as well.
Yeah, I really enjoyed.
There's something
that.
In me that loves like.
It's the conquering of Everest, isn't it?
The mm-hmm. progression and of conquering. Like, seeing, like, I can look up and look down, see how far I've come and how far I've got to go.
Yeah.
I find that really satisfying, and I think they did a really good job of it.
But that says so much for, like, their level design and traversal design. The fact you're just climbing a wall, you're just doing the same things that you actually do a lot in the game. Yeah. But by applying it to, like, this huge height and creating that sense of majesty as you get up there, like, it gives you an entirely different feeling.
Yeah. Nice, so good. Let's skip ahead a little bit to, while Trez is off doing that, he's on the quest for mask pieces, which is obviously part of Odin's prophecy. while they're doing that, Kratos is off trying to find his own sort of truth and prophecy from the Norns, which is again a section I think they could have cut, not cut completely, but got to a little bit quicker, the way you have to like go around on the walls and go to like the, it's always the third place you look.
Yeah.
But I do think the sequence itself of like getting on the Kelpie, going underwater and finding, like, I love the design of those Norns.
Yeah, I agree with you about they could have trimmed back the exploration part of it. There's that whole sequence, I replayed it for work to capture the Norn thing, and I forgot how long that whole section was, where you just fight in like your imagination and ghosts and stuff. And I didn't really necessarily feel like it needed to be there. I just kind of wanted to get to them, but I guess they had to make it like, this is no, that you can't just stumble upon the Norn. You have to work hard to get
the conversation
there.
That
yeah, it's really good.
So good. I love it. After that, Kratos, you know, you could say he finds purpose. He knows what he's got to do. So you go off and you get a new weapon.
Draupnir spear.
Which is forged from Draupnir, which, if you don't know what Draupnir is, it's a mythical ring in Norse mythology. It's a ring that duplicates itself. I love that scene where they just, again, the camera work in this game is ridiculous, where they just go follow Sindri down this little like lift well to this whole like well of rings. And well, they
heard the director refer to it as the Scrooge McDuck scene, and that's basically what it is, right?
It's so good. And yeah, you go off with Brock, and this whole sequence is incredible. Not only do you get that incredible moment when you're forging the spear, where just like that moment with Brock, it's like the first time Kratos has opened up to anyone apart from his son, really.
And it sort of makes sense, right? Because they're both the curmudgeon-y ones. They're both ones that have got such hard exteriors, and yet they're actually surprisingly soft inside.
Does he say, like, I need a true blacksmith. I need a real blacksmith to, like, honour this. And then, the first time you use that, it's not quite on the level of the blades reveal. Like, I don't, no matter how much I love God of Ragnarok, it doesn't have... It has some amazing moments. That blades moment, though, is untouchable.
They couldn't possibly replicate that because the blades come with the history and also the fact of
unexpected,
because we thought this was a new version of God of War.
Yeah.
And we didn't realise they were going to be referencing... beforehand, we thought it was a reboot sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't realise they were going to be referencing the old games. There's no way they can do that. The closest they can come to doing that now is talking about his old Greece stories and talking about how he vividly remembers it all.
I really love the bit where he's talking about like how he killed his brother Deimos. Like just those little bits that go back to that
original. They kind of do what I love so much about... I'm not spoiling Better Call Saul, don't worry. But it's what Better Call Saul does so well that it wraps up that series and Breaking Bad kind of in one go, whereas this kind of wraps up the Norse saga and gives closure to some of the Greek stuff as well. And that spear, like... the way that it's kind of modelled on a Spartan spear, and the way it feels is just, it's so fast.
Yeah.
It feels so good. And I love how everyone thought you're getting Mjolnir in this game.
Yes.
And the director basically said, we just thought that was too easy. Everyone's expecting that. Like,
But also, it would have been good, wouldn't it?
if you want to know my opinion, I think we are getting that in a future.
Right. So someone... obviously, picks up Mjolnir at the end of the game.
I'll say
so,
it now. Yeah. But like, my theory for the next game is almost like God of War kids. Not game, it's almost like a
God
lost,
of War babies.
God of War kids, but like Lost Legacy style. Yeah. And you play as Atreus, who's obviously Atreus in that. But Thrud is the Kratos.
Moves. We've had a big conversation about this, and I'm on well on board with the idea.
And Angerbodus helping you out as a companion. It's hunting, trying to bring the giants back.
I think it could be really good. I think it's going to be a tough sell without Kratos.
I feel that's why it won't be the next mainline God of War. Yeah. They'll do it as it's a 10-hour Lost Legacy style.
From moment one, they'll have to be like, this is a spin-off, we're still bringing you a Kratos adventure.
It needs to be exactly like what they do with Lost Legacy. Straight up with Lost Legacy, they were like, this isn't a Nate Drake story. And I think doing that...
if they're smart, they'll be like, and Kratos will return in God of War, whatever, Asia. Yeah. Which we'll see where we think it's going next. But anyway, we've still got Ragnarok to talk through. That spear, amazing. Love what you can do with it, the puzzles you can do with it. It's just, I love how they tease the whole time. So you see those little like wind things, you're like, I'm going to need something for this. Yeah. I didn't actually clock there'd be a weapon. I thought it would be just like another like arrow or something.
It did have the same sort of vibe for me that the blades did have in the last game, where I was so used to what I had that there was this reluctance inside me to use them.
I used the spear a lot from the point I got it. The spear and the axe. The blades are the ones I didn't use a lot during my playthrough.
The blades loads more this time. But the spear is the thing. I tried it and I'm like, this is cool. I'm going back to my souped-up weapons.
I found the spear
now
very useful for a lot of the berserker fights.
It is absolutely necessary for the hard bosses in this game. And by the end of the game, I was very au fait with it. But not at this point.
We'll come on to it's essential for one boss fight, which is very clever. Yeah. They did kind of like a puzzle boss with it to force you to use it at a point.
Yeah.
But do you like the spear map?
Not as much as the other weapons, I must
get
say.
Up, no. Sorry.
I don't actually think it has the impact of the axe, and that's a big reason why I'm an axe boy. Yeah. Like, that's my favourite one.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, just the smartness of kind of like they wanted to build a weapon which was a spear that you could chuck, and they were like, yeah, well, how the fuck does he get it back? Because we can't just have it be the Leviathan axe again. So, like, well, we found
it duplicate.
We found so an clever item from Norse mythology which justifies our gameplay reasons.
So also, clever, like, a returning spear would go against its main, like, design, which is about speed and fluency.
Yeah.
And, like, the axe is a heavy, clunky weapon, so you have to wait for it to come back to you. There's a lot of heft there. Yeah, it's
so good.
Like, they're genius how they put it together.
Before you use that spear for a boss battle, though, you get the whole Garm sequence, which kicks off in Helheim.
Yeah.
I love this, like, this whole sequence, the whole chase through Helheim, which is, like, really, I think, like, where they're hitting peak Uncharted in this, but also channeling the old God of War games. That's the big boss fight that feels like a big one from, like, the original trilogy.
You know, and also, what I love about these giant boss battles now is that they've truly realised, like, how to make these giant characters look good and feel good in the environment.
Yeah.
They look like what I felt in my head God of War 3 looked like.
Yeah,
and then when I go back and look at it, it's like,
oh,
they're very like flat textures on these things. But now they're like, the sense of scale in these games is like incredible.
I think the wonderful thing is because like a lot of games, actually, like the models are small, like, you know, quote unquote small. But I think because Kratos himself is so big on screen that when they do these massive monsters, there's a real genuine sense of these are titans world.
And then you get you get a much smaller scale boss fight against Heimdall, but equally as good. I think this is one of maybe my favourite boss fight in the game, because it does take, I worked out quite quickly, but I've been watching a lot of Twitch streams of this game just because I like seeing people get to these moments and seeing how they react. Some people stayed a little while to work out, like, I just can't hit him, how is this working?
Yeah.
In fact, like, so clever you can't, you just chuck it into the floor and then stun it with him, like, nice. And the moment where you first, it talks about direct first, the first time you actually get a shot on him is a punch, but it's actually the ring of the spear clipping to get the blood, like, showing that it is the spear how you kill him is, it's so good.
I like elements of it. I like the fact that you couldn't hit him for a long time because it made it feel different, like, oh, I've got to solve a problem here. I'm not a massive fan of games of you've beaten someone, now I'm gonna immediately get all my health back and I'm back in it again.
Sometimes, especially like we reference the Soul games, sometimes it's very soul destroying when you're just like, oh god, there's another phase. This game is very kind in the fact it doesn't make you do it all again. It checkpoints you halfway through. But yeah, killing him was very satisfying. Like we said, no redeemable features about Heimdall, and that is the moment where you can see, the moment after you kill him, and it's like that Kratos is just like covered in his blood. And he's just like, I need that moment of fulfilling the prophecy and setting Ragnarok motion, but also knowing he had to, like, it is inescapable.
Also, all the, like, Heimdall is so irredeemable. Even all his supposed friends hate him as well. Everybody hates him. Like, he only is around because he has value to Odin. And even Odin doesn't like him. He just has value to him.
Yeah. This, like, from this point onwards, I think the game is just knockout, like, gold from this point. Like, you then escape on the, like, boat, you get the cool what's the name of the guy who jumps on two dragons and kills them? He's a legend. He's one of Freya's
Big dude with a sword.
See,
I like, because you have to then go and find him, don't on. I was just like, I don't know who this dude is, and I don't really know why I should care.
You get to know him quite well, because then you help him out by finding lots of things around the world, and then eventually, I don't know if you've done this, if you go back to Charlie at the end of the game, he's in there and he'll look after Charlie, the giant tortoise, for you. It's a nice little moment.
I do think there is a couple of characters in the game where the game acted like I would care about them.
It's all of Freya's camp, and this is why I think that it should have been part of the reason why I think it should have been two games.
Yeah.
It feels like this was the game that should have been much more about collecting your fellowship, basically putting together your army.
Mass Effect 2.
Mass Effect 2 to Mass Effect. This is exactly what Mass Effect 2 goes wide, and Mass Effect 3 funnels back in again for the apocalypse, and that's the way I think it should have gone.
The geezer who was, I can't remember his name, but who was a pig and now he's not. No idea. Like, when they said, oh, it's you, and it's like, oh yeah, we get, and I was like, I barely remember this. It's like he expected me to care about this guy. Not
straight
not
after
interested.
That. And that's when you can then go to the crater for the first time, which is, I think, my favourite area in the game, just because the moment you step out in there and you're just like, this is just like a prehistoric land. Yeah, there's just dragon. Mm-hmm. There's
that dragon fight. I love it where you knock it out the sky.
There's like four dragons to go in there. Mm-hmm. That is a ridiculously big area that's just completely optional. You might not even find it. You can change that area in a cool way. I don't know if you've done that, Matt. There's a bit where you open up the rivers.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I took ages to work that. I was like, oh,
I struggled big time with that. That's cardi. And I'd missed the whole area somehow. Right. But for ages, I was roaming around that crater, like, couldn't work out how to make things happen or get to places.
That is, they kind of don't really tell you, but at the same time, they do kind of tell you just by looking at it. There's like, this is an area you might want to come back to because there's a lot of.
The dragon fights are super sad. So I've got a clip saved. I've never done anything with it. But where dragon's coming down head on to me and I threw a spear and just directly in the face and then pulled it out. And it's like, oh, this is like House of the Dragons and
I love that. But then if you don't do that, you just carry along the main path, which involves going back to Sindri's house, where, of course, the massive reveal of the game happens. You kind of... Brock clocks it first, but to his own demise, that...
I'm when I was watching that, I just thought Brock was being unreasonable at first.
They do
like,
a great
what's
job.
His problem?
They do a great job, and then you kind of clock it. It's like, oh, he has been calling him Loki. That is weird.
Yeah.
But even at that point, I was like, oh, Odin's just like pretending to be Tyr. I didn't realize the whole bloody game. that Tyr was Odin, and it is like when you go back to that, you do. There is like little clever lines. There is little things where you're like, oh, he is. Like, there's one bit like. Hours before that where Kratos gets annoyed of Tyr. He's like, why are you trying to tell my son what to do? Stop pushing him this way. And you don't really clock that. You just think Tyr's just being, you know, he's got his own motives, but you don't realise that, it was Odin the whole time. And that reveal is incredible.
Yeah, and it's a great use of the spear as well, just before Odin disappears, just grabbing the mask off him.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro, like, yes, and that's when, like, Sindri has his big moment, I think. His little, like, speech and, like, he's just like, basically he's had enough. he has had enough. And, like, when Sindri tears up, that gets me.
So just after this, it's kind of a point that highlights something me and Matt have spoken about. And the one-shot thing, right? I don't, like, get why that's such a thing that people like. And I also think the game is maybe too much of a slave to it. And it means things, like, don't necessarily happen what they would in storytelling device. I feel like the going to find Sindri and then coming all the way back again, I feel like... that journey just felt unnecessarily long.
I like, isn't that the bit where you go hunt, you go back, the crows is just like, we're done, we go home. Is it that bit?
Yes, but then there's also, then you have to go to Midgard, you have to go to the Temple of Tyr, and then you find it, and then you've got the journey back. But that's a small example. I think there's lots of examples of where the pacing, like moments didn't feel quite right because they're a slave to, we can't cut this.
It never felt like they were slave to it to me. I thought it always...
Well, they inherently are because they can't cut away from it, right?
Yeah, I never thought it was to the detriment of the story is what I'm trying to... I feel like...
There was, I don't want to step on it because I know Matt thinks it, but you know, the example of the Thor scene right in Asgard.
So in terms of kind of like the pub brawl,
the bar fight. Yeah. That is a... I think it's great and... getting the connection between Atreus and Thrud is like he's got basically he's an alcoholic father
that should have happened 4 hours before.
But, that bar fight is a bit like that is slightly out of pace.
My big thing is with this is Thor is one of my favorite characters in this entire game. I actually am more interested in Thor than I am Odin, and this arguably is ties into why I think that I would have rearranged this a bit. That bar fight comes in act 3, right? Like, this is like everything's going to hell at this point, and it feels like it's an act 1 piece. It's a character establishment.
Maybe that should happen the first time you go
and
to
Asgard, really wish there'd been like that had happened earlier so that you could get this motivation of, okay, her dad's like a massive fucking drunk, and then you spend more time with Thrud so you'd be able to understand what was happening to her family, and you'd be able to tie that into what Odin was doing to him, and ultimately the reason why Sif makes the decision she does at the end would have made so much more sense, because you would have had a proper real understanding of that family.
I get that. I know what you're saying. Yeah, I like what they're doing.
I want
that moment,
more from
just
Thor,
in a different
basically.
Place. Yeah. And side point, I love that Sif is just Elena from Uncharted. As soon as I heard that voice, I was like, this is
great. I did not recognise
that. Sounds exactly like her.
Yeah, well, I've not played Uncharted for years at this point.
Yeah, that was good. I like that. Then next, after that, you do a bit more mask stuff. I don't have a lot to say about the mask stuff. It's as close as they come to a MacGuffin sort of thing.
That's what it is,
but,
right? Like,
but it does the job well, I think. And going for hunting for it in different realms
is
good.
It's the briefcase with the gold glower. Yeah. It's the allure of the thing.
It does look
a
bit too... It is quite funny how similar it does look to the mask from the mask with Jim Carrey.
Which is Loki's mask,
but
right?
We haven't talked about Ingrid the sword. That is good, because mm-hmm. that reminded me of V from Devil May Cry a bit.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah,
I like just how it... I love that weapon. But yeah, then you go off to old Muspelheim. Mm-hmm. See Surtur, I love the first time you walk up to Surtur and he just says go away and throws you off.
He
is so good.
He obviously is in a very character. Small amount, but I think he has some great, I don't know who the actor is, but I think he's really good and has some really cool lines as well. There's that line on paper where it says have you ever been in love, kid? It's pretty good, and on paper that just like seems vanilla, but his performance on it really elevates it.
You can tell he's a very mournful soul.
When you say that, Dale, I think the one thing that this game that does so well is like actually the dialogue that the characters have is all like relatively quote unquote modern, and yet they make it feel such a piece with everything, despite the fact everything looks like it's from the Viking age.
The performances and direction of those performances.
Yeah, so right. Yeah, they talk unbelievable. They talk like they live in 2022. Yeah, yeah. You know.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Unbelievable. Then you forge Surtur to become Ragnarok itself, which is an interesting twist on the concept. I love that double Valkyrie fight as well. That's just a stunning backdrop, the Spark of the World. Yeah. It looks incredible. I love that they kind of sprinkle Valkyrie fights into this game because they know people love them, but they want a different end game challenge this time. Mm-hmm. But that's great. Then it kind of, that's the point of, there isn't a point of no return in this game, but this is the point where like, right, you're going into the final battle and you get that incredible just run from where you all go. You kind of have that Mass Effect moment if everyone's camped at the temple. You kind of talk to Atreus, like it's the last time you kind of talk to him as a boy, and you kind of tell him a story to go to sleep. Then that dream sequence and the way the music swells in that dream sequence. And I think there's the line which is the much better version of the Vision line from WandaVision, which is to have loved fully is to grieve. No, to have loved. To have loved fully is to grieve deeply.
Something like that. I think it's the proper tearjerker, isn't it?
That line plus, the score, just the phase theme music just coming up is just unbelievable. And then followed by another incredible moment when you blow the horn and it's
your Avengers assemble.
Oh, yeah. So but again, the music just full on, just.
And the movement of the camera as it pans around and you see, like, that's a bit like, you know, they light the beacons in Lord of the Rings and you know that it's all kicking off.
That was the proper chill down the spine moment for me. That was like the closest that came to the Blades moment. It wasn't the most emotionally impactful scene, but it was like, this is fucking cool.
I love how easy, once he's blown the Galahorn, it's like how easy it is potentially getting around all those realms now compared to all the things you had to do in the first game to go through.
It's just like, the way he just says, prepare yourself, and he's just fucking running. I know next is Ragnarok, and I know this is
one of my low points.
I personally really like what they do with it, but I know I do kind of understand your thought of it doesn't quite look enough like a full scale war.
I expected to step through to start the assault on Asgard, and I expected it to be Helm's Deep or the assault on Minas Tirith. And it wasn't, and it never felt like it boiled over in the way that I wanted it to.
I never felt like there's obviously, the Thor's flying around the sky that you got, what's this? Is it Jormungandr or something? The giant sea, the serpent?
Serpent, yeah.
Yeah, and then you've got obviously Ragnarok.
Punches him back in time. That's fucking cool.
But you've got these giants duking out, but I never really got the sense that I was in that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very PS2 sort of. That's a thing going off all the way in there. They're repeating the same animations. No, not PS2 in terms of graphics, but like in terms of it's in the distance. I wanted these giants and things. I wanted to see Ragnarok's arm swing past me at one point. I wanted to be involved in it.
I personally love the moment where you just Atreus just goes full bear and you get to control the bear for a while. That's a good power play.
Yeah.
I do like how and then Fenrir turns up in anger. But like it does feel. I know what you mean. It's not full-scale, like, Lord of the Rings style, like, thousands of people run into battle. But I do think there is a good amount of stuff.
I think it was one of those things that, like, I'd spent a reasonable amount of the game recruiting people, and part of that end is, like, getting all of the races on side to make sure. And I know that, like, there's a story element to kind of, like, there's the siege engines are preventing people from coming through the realms. But I do feel like I would have liked a bigger spectacle in that point.
I also feel like because you've got your groups of friends fighting as well, I did feel like I wanted to run. I almost like in Mass Effect 3, actually, like, you know, that straight line to your target, but there's all these things going on around you, and then you see your friends fighting and crossing, and it never really felt like that. It constantly felt like you've got your gang and you're like taking the side path around all the big action.
Yet again, Sindri has another incredible moment where he's the one who gets the siege engines down and then just turns around like proper angry and just goes, is this what you wanted? And then it's like, oh, mm-hmm. Sindri
does feel like he has a little hammer trick for every solution.
Oh, so Sindri
The reason that Sindri can do it is because what's the...
little tuning fork he has?
Yeah, but what's the... Is it like a South African dwarf guy that you meet earlier on with the...
Durin, is it?
Yeah, Durin. Hasn't he like... He put those things in the siege engines, didn't he? I think is the idea. Like, it's all of this is kind of like that they've had like fail safes for
they have a backdoor installed. Just,
whatever the problem, hit his little hammer on something and that's solved.
Oh, it's so good. Then we get into the end game, which is good battle with Thor again.
Yeah,
you don't get to kill him because Odin does it himself.
That might be one of my favorite battles in the game. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it just felt like really. Like personal and just like super emotional fight as well.
I don't think the Odin fight is by any means bad, but I prefer the Thor fight that came before it to the Odin fight.
I do think
it's less gamey.
Yes, the Odin one is very gamey. Mm-hmm. It's very an Assassin's Creed boss.
They are kind of cool, and that battle is like, this is an old man. I suppose magic. We have to do lots of magic because he's not going to out-muscle.
The sequence for me that kind of shattered it a little bit was he's floating in the middle and then. This area is going to be electrified in 3, 2, 1. Now it's electrified.
I do think like, you didn't need to fight Odin at the end. Odin is not a person.
I feel like if you
didn't
know, people would be annoyed. Like
Thor
should want to
Thor
kill
is quite Thor clearly is, the agree, last boss fight, or even Ragnarok himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm not massive on the way Odin died anyway. Mm-hmm. Like because I wanted it. This is coming off the back of doing a video with our Norse expert, but I did want it to be a little bit more like, because the idea is it subverts all Norse mythology, but I still wanted it to be like you know how Ragnarok's sword comes down, flaming sword, and he's fighting with Freya about it, whereas the Norse mythology is Suta flights with a flaming sword. Yeah. So it's like a spin on the mythology, so it still exists. And then that regards, like in Norse mythology, Fenrir eats Odin, and I kind of wanted that to happen, and I felt like it could have happened as well.
I agree that would have been cool, but also I just like the moment of like, this is Sindri's revenge for Blot, and he's the one who gets
you could have got Sindri involved in it somehow as well. I still feel like, because Fenrir comes through that portal at the end, he could have come through and it could have just Odin just had to kiss him and just chomped him
at that point. They've kind of committed to Fenrir just being passive, if you know, because he is, you know.
I just felt like they could have done a bit more to be like, yes, we're telling our story, but we've still got these nods of, you know, this from Norse mythology.
That's fair. I do think a lot of people don't know Norse mythology, so maybe they don't care as much.
But I still think it would have been a powerful moment as well if it came from behind.
I love that moment of just like, you're like, are we going to keep Odin? Is this going to turn up in a later game? Like, is he going to come back? And then, Sindri just grabbing it and getting the hammer down. Just like, again, the look on his face is incredible.
I guess that ultimately, I didn't really care about the idea of giant souls being trapped in objects.
I really liked it. I thought it was a very clever spin on, because that's how they obviously get Fenrir and Jormungandr to become. A really fun spin on like Angerboda and Loki being the parents of them. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
I thought that was really well done. And the moment that they did it in the serpent, it's linked to. I was like, I know what's happening here. Mm-hmm. This is very cool. But after that, after the fight, you think who's alive, who's dead. Surprisingly, few people like. Friendly people die in this game. Brock dies, which is a bit of a gut punch. Freya, you know, means a lot to Freya. You don't really spend, it goes to your point, you don't spend enough time to him for that to really have an impact.
The more people that die, the less it means anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, exactly. I think it's like, coming out of it, like, apart from the villains, like, Brock is the one friendly, Freya as well, I suppose. Yeah. But Brock is the one that matters, right? Yeah. That's the one you remember.
It's the one that gets a funeral.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We've already kind of touched on the ending. But when the end is them saying goodbye. We've already kind of touched on how good that ending is and how emotionally just devastating it can be. I like the way that they handle it. Like, you can now go out into the world, there's a lot to do, and Freya is now your companion. Yeah. They set that up really well, because I'm glad they didn't kill Atreus or kill Kratos. Like, you can't kill... No, like... If people haven't played The Last of Us, obviously something big happens in The Last of Us Part 2. Yeah. I think it works really well for that story. Kratos dying in this wouldn't have felt...
No, it's also right. Like he's the linchpin to the franchise, and doesn't stop here. So
it's not the story they're telling either, was it? It's about, you know, a father accepting his son becoming a man.
Exactly.
That story isn't then the father dies.
It's not Atreus taking up the mantle of his father.
The prophecy sort of stuff is the stuff that like fits the lore, right?
Yeah.
The actual story isn't really about that prophecy at all. The story, as you say, is about the relationship between these two characters. And that's not like, if it was to do with loss, as you said, sort of like as the previous game, you know, had more of, then maybe Kratos would have died. But it's not about loss, this one. It's not about dealing with losing a relationship.
No. It's about a new chapter, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, well, I just think it's a phenomenal ending. There is some really cool post-game stuff. Like mentioned, you can go to Niflheim. There's the prison. If you haven't done that, the real tier is at the bottom of that prison. Yeah. And that's where Odin basically keeps anyone he wants to impersonate. So you see the body of that dwarf he impersonates later. Yeah, there's some. You can also clear up some Asgardian things, which don't ultimately do anything, which is a little weird. There's all those berserker fights, some of which are tough as nails. And you can fight Gunnar, the new Valkyrie Queen, who's an absolute ball ache.
Well, the one, I think, honestly, the one I struggle with the most was the Berserker fight when there's three of them in one.
Oh, yeah.
That was a pain in my ass.
You haven't seen that probably, Matt.
No, I've done two in one, and that's pretty tough.
Yeah, there's one with three. Gunnar herself and just the Berserker King.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just horrible stuff. But at the same time, brilliant stuff. Yeah, the platinum for this game is very
enjoyable. Like, I'm not a guy who, like, I don't enjoy dying lots in games. So, like, that's why I don't play, like, From games and stuff. And they make the game has a lot of accessibility options. You can put it into story mode, which still is still challenging.
It's still not easy,
But they even have other options, like you can set it so when you trigger certain elements, like when half the health goes down, you get a cutscene. You can set it so, okay, that when you
I
die...
I didn't know you could do that.
Didn't you know you could do that? You can turn it on and off, so... You can set the option so, yeah, I've achieved half of it, it will reload at that point if you're really struggling. So, but I think it's serving everybody. It's like, well, play how you want to play, you know? And it's still challenging,
especially defeating Gnar has a cool little moment at the end of it as well. And there's some really cool artifacts you can get from that game as well. I think it's just a post game one you can buy, you don't have to do anything after it. Maybe it's after doing all the Asgardian ones. I don't know. I got it fairly soon after defeating the game. Have you got Mimir's artifact? It's not that effective, but it's very fun.
Where he shoots things out of his eyes.
Shoots the Bifrost out of his eyes.
I feel like that's from one of the Berserker fights, maybe?
I can't remember where you get it, but I didn't use that much because it's not actually...
But it's very funny. The chakras that you can throw with the Bifrost
I use that a lot, and I will say the one you get from defeating all the Berserkers and the Berserker King, that one is... I wouldn't have done Gnar without that one.
Absolutely. That's the thing. Don't even approach the Valkyrie Queen until, like...
You've done all the Berserkers.
Until you've done everything, basically. They're the very last thing to do in the game.
Yeah, so good. Let's have a few quick fires before we end this, because you've already spoken a lot about this game. But it is bloody good.
Oh, God, it's 1 o'clock, Jesus.
Yeah. Whoa, real time. favourite character, quick fire. Who's your favourite character?
I mean, it's always going to be Kratos, but outside of him,
outside of Kratos.
Thor. I love Thor.
Odin.
I'm Mimir. I think this is the game Mimir really becomes like an uncle.
Mm-hmm,
and the way definitely. I know he says brother to everyone.
Little
but like,
brother.
Yeah. I love Mimir in this game, especially when you do some of the side stuff that builds out his relationship with Sigrun and stuff like that.
I know you just said quickfire, but did you feel like Mimir had a few occasions where they love telling you he's the smartest man in the world, but like you didn't see that coming.
Kind of
you didn't work that out,
it's
mate.
Kind of part of his charm. He's not like, he can't see... He's not all-seeing, though, is he? He's just, like,
but I wanted to be, like, knowing. Like, how Batman is, like, the greatest detective. He always has a solution.
I think that kind of plays into the fact that Odin's the one who's kind of orchestrating him. He's kind of... He can fog Mimir's vision to a certain extent. Someone's turned the aircon back on.
The aircon's just come on, so sorry about that, if you're hearing that on the mics.
we're almost done anyway, so there you go. Favourite moment, that's a tough one, isn't it? We kind of covered a lot of them. Do you have one?
I've already said mine, which is about when Kratos says, "What do I call you to Atreus?" Like, that's my favourite moment, because I just remember how Path was, and I'm not the greatest person remembering lines, but that one just immediately like stuck in my head.
And then I've already said it, but when Atreus comes back from Ironwood and Kratos comes out, just because like almost like for the opposite reasons of you, Dale, it's like it's seeing Kratos, like that's a man desperate to trust his son, and his son has betrayed his trust, and it's not that he's angry, it's he's desperately upset about it. So good.
I did have one, but I've forgotten it. I think like if I can cheat, it's kind of like a double moment. It's a double hit. It is the dream of Faye at the end going into blowing the horn. Like, I think that's a great little like 10-minute sequence that is. You don't even really play it, but God, it's good. What else we got? I already kind of talked about the Easter eggs, like Tyr, with the subtitles and being on the bridge. That's a fun
all
little
the,
thing.
All the PlayStation games in the poems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the line about where Kratos basically says, I was in PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. That's a funny one. That's good. That's a good one. Yeah. And basically, what's next? I'll go through what I think's next first.
Okay.
I think there will be that spin-off Lost Legacy-style game because they'll want to spend a long time on the next mainline God of War, which I think might not even come to the end of the PS5. That could be like 6 years away. There is... So, when you free tier from the prison, he pops up 6 times in different realms, in different places. You can go find him. He's wandering around.
Have you not just stumbled across him yet?
No.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay.
Once you do that, he's kind of... He has things he says, but the director has teased. It's not what he says, it's what he's doing. Right. That you want to look out for, and it teases the future of the series. So there is moments where he's doing sort of like, he is doing like Tai Chi, and he is doing different Asian sort of rituals. So I feel like we're going in that direction. Yeah. We're going, I think it may cover not just one Asian mythology, but maybe they're across like Indian, sort of Chinese. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking maybe Chinese is like, because they're going to come into this problem of like, you can't really do Indian gods because a lot of those gods are worshipped now, and it would be quite blasphemous.
I was going to say the blasphemy aspect, because even Sumetra has clothes that people from Hinduism, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Christianity is like played in games all the time and riffed on. Like,
yeah, but there's different variations. Like, there are different cultures have different feelings. Like, about I feel how like
there
were
so many Indian gods, and it's such a like untapped video game
in
landscape.
Terms of visual style and stuff. It would be incredible, but yeah, I just feel like
it's not on us as people that don't practice.
If you faced
that
off against 20-foot Ganesh, it might be an issue. It would be incredible. Like, it would feel amazing. But I feel like maybe China or even Japanese, like that sort of. That's where I'd like to see somewhere different. Like, you could also do Celtic, but I feel Celtic is too
close
similar
at the
tournament.
I also feel like the other like elephant in the room
you're
is Egypt,
fight,
right? Egyptian. But I also feel like that, again, that's why I really want India, because I feel like that's been covered in so many video games.
I feel like they'd do some really cool stuff with the depiction of Egyptian gods, but I also, like, maybe this is my own ignorance, the locations wouldn't be as varied.
Sure.
Like, I don't know, they didn't...
Well, it depends how
mystical
you get about it. To be fair,
they did
with
Greece. That didn't need a variety.
It'll be mythological, and they don't have to adhere to... Like, all of the stuff in the Norse mythology is not set in anywhere real, is it?
Exactly.
It's all in... And, you know, in Egypt, you've always got the element of, like, what happens if it's literally set in the afterlife?
Yeah. So you're not going to fight Jesus, is what we're saying. I don't think they'll step near that.
But I would love, when you were saying, like, the depiction of Egyptian, because I'd quite like to see Egypt as the next one, particularly because, you know, when you're discovering more about Tyr in the first game, you find that mural which shows you him travelling around all the different pantheons, and it's got the Celtic knot, and it's got the Sparta, like, symbol.
It's got
and
some
obviously,
hieroglyphs, hasn't it?
Yeah. So, which suggests that Egypt is one of the places that Tyr has been. And I'd love the idea of, like, obviously Egyptian gods tend to be half human, half animal, don't they? I'd love to see what that art design team would come up with, because would it be they'd be wearing armor that was that, or would they literally be talking crocodiles like they are in like Moon Knight?
You could do some really cool, like, almost like dreamy, like hallucinogenic stuff with that.
I think the real problem, and I'm like, the cleverer people than me will solve this, is what is the tone and what is Kratos's journey? And
does he go back home?
Do you look at it as like a man's journey, when, you know, once your kids have left home, what is the next step and what's your next struggle? Is it like retirement and dealing with feeling unwanted like what, you lost your place in the world and you're no longer relevant?
Like, does he go with Mimir and Freya back to Greece? Does that work? I don't know. Like,
I think that, like, they'll work it out, but that's going to be the tricky part coming up. Like, what do you do after you can't do another romantic relationship because you've already done that twice, and the last one was so impactful, it would devalue it, I think. And the child father son relationship's kind of covered as well.
And the other thing is, as well, it's like the real important, you know, there's two important differences, right, between the Greece era and the Norse era, is that not only are they very different narratively in the exploring of things, but they're very different gameplay wise. And I think I'd want to see wherever the next one is has a
puzzle platformer, 2D side scroller.
Who the hell knows? But I would like it to play slightly differently again.
I mean, part of me is resistant to that because I love how much these play. Like, I'd grow tired of the old God of War, how they played. Whereas this one I haven't. But also it makes a lot of sense. It's like Resident Evil do to a certain degree. Yeah. You know, every few games change it up completely. Mm-hmm. And there's part of me that does want to see that. Also, do you know what? There's part of me that would love to see this engine remake the original God of War game. Mm-hmm. I would love to see like the original against Hades, like
Calliope.
The entire first game again, but with this engine. Mm-hmm. I would really love to see that.
I have faith in whatever they choose to do, because two knockout games there. They really have mastered the action adventure game, mm-hmm. haven't they? Yeah. Like unbelievable stuff.
Right.
What a game. We've spoken long about enough, I think. I think I've convinced myself over this course this hour that it probably is my game of the year. But who knows? We'll see in a few weeks when results start coming in for that. What a game.
Yeah.
Love it.
Can we go and have lunch now?
Yeah, go on then. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. How dark the night, just how cold the wind can blow. I've no more hunger now to see where. Keep my warmth in blood upon the snow. Blood upon the snow. Blood upon the snow.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.